Good morning. How are you today? Savior, let the heavens and I proclaim kingdom shall pass away. Above your name. Okay, good morning, everyone. How are you today? And thank you so much for joining me. This is PF Things, episode 93. It's been 93 days. Very soon we're going to hit day 100, and then in no time we'll get to day 365 thereabouts. Okay, I'm committed to doing this for like 1 year. God help me. Okay, how are you doing today? Thank you for always joining me. I really, really appreciate you. And I do not take for granted the fact that you join every now and then. Now, we're still talking about the science of parenting a weak kid. I want to ensure that we tidy this up within the next maybe 5 days there, but less. So that we can move to into other stuff. But I mean, you guys have been having value, great value for what we're sharing. And I'm really, really grateful for the gift of you. Now, today I want to look at the seven deadly killers of a child's potential. The seven deadly killers of a child's potential that people kill their children without knowing. A lot of parents kill their children, not because they are bad parents, but because they didn't know better. The same way many of our parents killed us emotionally, they killed us, mentally. We didn't die physically. We're still alive and we're giving glory to God. But of what essence is our life when our confidence is compromised and the original you has been traded for the tantrums and the temper of your parent? Many of us were the receiving end of our parents' anger and the lack of serenity within them. So we were beaten and slapped and done all kinds of things was done to us that many of us are really, really struggling to recover our life. And in our confusion, especially if you live in Africa, the place where you find succor is usually going to be the religious space. But how well have we fared even by finding succor in the religious space? Now, while the religious space has done a whole lot of good in tranquilizing and stabilizing us making us feel good, but you realize that has become another addiction, you know, that we are spending the rest of our life, you know, getting addicted to that space without really living our lives. So an average person will get to their deathbed, you know, and they suddenly realize that all they've just done is to come to this planet to work, to raise their children, to get married, to function maybe within a church or a mosque, and to die, basically, right? That if you look at your life, you're not likely to write a book, you're not likely to plant a tree, you're not likely to build an estate, you're not likely to create an invention, so that you may live life without solving the problem for which you were born. Unfortunately, a lot of our children are going through that same confusion right now, that many of us were brought up to have low self-esteem, to feel not good enough by the criticism of our parents, which was meant to actually inspire us to do better, but which was counterproductive, basically. Now, I love the way James Morrison puts it, and I'm going to be starting with a quote by Jim Morrison. He said, "The most loving parents and relatives commit murder with smiles on their faces. They force us to destroy the person we really are, a subtle kind of mother." I'll take that again. The most loving parents and relatives commit murder with smiles on their faces. They force us to destroy the person we really are, a subtle kind of mother. That a lot of parents and a lot of relatives, they kill their children because the moment you force a child to become someone else other than who it truly is, you have killed that child. That you strike fear into your... You see the things our parents used to pride themselves about. I take no nonsense. I'm a disciplinarian. Those were the things they used to brag about, their capacity to beat us. And we even, you know, take pleasure in poking fun at some of these things. So we talk about, you know, the parents of old, they will reset your brain with a slap. Who resets the brain of a royalty with a slap? The fact that you even accepted that, you know, you slap and you beat and you yell, and that's what resets the brain of that child, is already a feedback that something has fundamentally gone wrong, because you reset. Even animals don't need cane for them to be reset. Now you can actually train an animal, and an animal can respond to you. How much more a human being? So instead of admitting that our parenting script has failed, we throw our temper tantrums on the child and we bully a child into submission. Now, James Morrison is saying that the most loving parent, that you love your child, but you can kill your child in your quest to love a child. You can kill a child in the quest to correct him. The moment your child is no longer free to be himself, is no longer free to ask questions, is no longer free, you know, to manifest himself, to make mistakes, learn from his mistakes, you have killed that child. So what are the seven deadly killers of a child's potential that a lot of parents are not aware of? Number one is assumption. Assumption is when you take a position without critical analysis and accurate interpretation, that you assume what your child is going through. You assume that you know what your child is trying to do. So, for example, you say to a child, stand up, and he sits down. You say, stand up, and he sits down. If you conclude that that was rebellion, that was disobedience, without seeking to find out what was going on in the mind of a child, and you take action, you may have killed that child. Now, a lot of children are not given opportunities to defend themselves before we mete out punishment on them. Now, instead of discipline, what we do is punish. Now, if you don't give him opportunity to defend himself, what you are communicating is you are not a human being and you have no emotion. Now, so when we raise children who become mean, we now say, oh, why are you mean? Why are you wicked? Why are you this? But we raise them to become so. That before you discipline a child or before you punish a child, which I don't like to use that word, right? Can you get into his heart? So if you say, sit down and he's standing up, or sit down, stand up and he's sitting up, you want to know, is there anything the matter? What is going on in your mind? He could have been absent-minded. There were times you were absent-minded and you were not punished for it. You are human. Your mind could travel. You may actually not be interested in something. You may not even hear it. That's why the fact that people are shouting around you, right? You may be lost in thought. Now, if we do not consider that possibility, and you take a position and you call your child rebellious and you beat that child simply because that child has not responded to you, you, it's another way to kill the potential of a child, right? Because you are not giving him opportunity to express himself. If you interpret a child wrongly, so you get into your child's room and two legs are on the wall and the child is sleeping, and you assume or you conclude that your child has joined witches and coven based on the number of movies, depending on the part of Africa that you live in, that you have seen, which has shaped your interpretation, you can kill the potential of a child. If you have a child who argues a lot with you and you conclude that he's disobedient and rebellious, and you beat him to submission and you say, when your parents are talking, you keep quiet, you may have silenced, you know, a motivational speaker. You may have silenced an activist. So the moment the child becomes quiet, you become very excited and you share testimonies. You may have killed the activism in him or the lawyer in him simply because of your temper tantrums, right? So when you assume a child, or you even assume who you think your child should be, right, without accurate analysis, accurate data, is another way to have killed a child. Because the question you ask is, where are all those great icons that you grew up with? Where are all those children who show potentials, the ones who said they're going to be pilots, the ones who said they're going to be doctors? Where are they? Who have they become? How come they did not become what they said they were going to become? What happened between what they said and who they later became? Right. Assumption is the lowest level of knowledge. Once you assume the potential of a child, you can destroy that child. If you assume that your child should join a particular religion, your child should behave in a particular way, without seeking to pick signal from that child, is a deadly killer of a child's potential. That your child will show you signal. It's your responsibility to decode the signal your child is sending, interpret it accurately, and take action based on your interpretation. That your child, you choose a school for your child, not because the school is nearby or because the school belongs to your church, or because your friend attended school. You choose a school based on the potential of a child, right? You cannot afford to assume the potential of your child. When I talk to my son consistently, I remind him of who he is. If a sister reports him, I'm taking him up and we are having a conversation. We just had a conversation right now before I came online, and it was a deep conversation, right? And he said to me, "Oh, Dad, I didn't see it that way, but now I understand it." We need to be friends with our children, because, I mean, the stage is right now is the stage where I have to be a friend, because it's going to move into teenage years in another 1 year, and I will become a coach. Do you understand? Right. So assumption is the number one deadly killer of a child's potential. You cannot assume a child's potential. A child may be manifesting the potential of a scientist, and if that doesn't fit into your religious space, you may demonize him and take him to a prophet for deliverance until they deliver him out of the purpose for which he was born. Number two is arrogance. Arrogance is another deadly killer of a child's potential when you don't know and you are too proud to learn. In all my seminars, I usually will ask, how many parents have studied parenting? Now, before I came live, I was studying, you know, for like the last, before I went to bed, I was studying about the parenting system that produced Alexander the Great. And when I woke up, I went to a documentary and I was able to conclude our research, because I want to research as many templates as possible, because I'm also raising children, right? So many of us, in our ignorance, we're very arrogant, right? So we just assume because you give birth to a child, automatically you can raise a child, when consistently it is proven that you can't even sustain a relationship. You can't keep an effective relationship, but you naturally just think that, the gift of parenting is wired into you, or you pray it in, right? Or supernaturally is going to be delivered to you. No, it doesn't work that way. Parenting is a science that has to be learned. Now, arrogance is you don't know and you are too proud to learn. So when we say to people, come for parenting seminars, the question is, what is it going to teach me, right? After all, I've raised three children successfully. What do they call successfully? Successful. Their parenting success is dependent on the fact that they have taken the child through secondary school, through university. The child now works and he has gotten a job and is now living a life. The question is your success what, I mean, someone says that success is what you have achieved compared to what you could have achieved. They are not answering the question, is that child fulfilled? Has that child found his calling? Is that child living his calling? Is the child a blessing to humanity? Is that child, an icon at the highest level possible? They are not answering that question, but because they have been able to pay school fees, they assume that they've earned the right to parent a child. Now, arrogance can kill your child's potential, right? Because it's arrogance that is not making you listen to your child. Your child wants to talk to you, but you have not created the environment, because you think that parenting must be fear-driven. No, parenting must be love-driven. And one thing about Africans that we must understand is, which is why we struggle to understand the love of God, because it looks like compromise, all right? And it looks like indiscipline. We are more in tune with the fear of God. Right, so when we're praying and when we talk about the God, the unkillable killer, you see the way we gyrate and we flex like Amadioa, right? But when we talk about the God of love, you see our silence. Why? Because many of us never experienced love with our father, so we don't understand the place of love. We do not know that there are two motivations when it comes to changing a behavior. You can serve God out of fear. It's not sustainable, because you're going to consistently violate his law. But you can serve God out of love, that there's a way you can so love someone that you don't want to sin against them, right? But we are used to being cajoled, being punished. The fear of hellfire is why a lot of people are not committing sin. If they say there's no hellfire, you will see them go ahead to commit sin. But that is not sustainable, right? So you need to humble yourself and be open to learn, to assume that you don't know. I mean, consistently, I say to myself, Praise, I still don't know as much As I should know, when it comes to the subject of parenting, and this is me, with all I have learned, with all I've exposed myself to, I still say I don't know. But imagine someone who has not done any study, who just feels like, I can kid a child, I can send a child to school. No, that's not what it takes to parent effectively. Like we said, the word parenting is the word, the one that can bring forth, that can bring forth the potential of the child till the child is able to express that potential in service to God and humanity. Number three, killer of a child's potential are your personal pains. Your personal pain. When you fail to deal with your personal pain and frustration, yet you are trying to get the best out of your child. Now, a lot of us are very angry with a child, not because the child is doing anything wrong, but because that child is a mirror of who we used to be, right? Many of us cannot stand the play of our children, so we shout, you need to be serious, you need to be serious, you need to be serious. You that has become very serious, who exactly have you become? Can we become honest with ourselves and conclude that we have not become anything close to what we are capable of becoming because of the way we were raised, right? And if the template that produced us has not produced us to become global icons, who is now employer of labor, he has not raised us to know how to run a business successfully, right? Because even we have gone to Harvard, we still don't know how to run a business intentionally. It has not taught us how to build system. It has not taught us how to manifest at the highest level, how to write proposals, defend the proposal, go after what we truly want, right? It has taught us to apologize for what we truly desire, to hide behind religion, to deny of ourselves, and to pretend that we don't love what we love, right? To hate what we love, to embrace what we hate, to bow down to the people we hate, right? That is what religion and culture has delivered to us. And now, I am not saying religion is bad, right? I believe in spirituality. But you see, you need to heal from your personal pain. Many of you are battling with trust, so you do not trust your children. Not because your child cannot be trusted, because you can't trust yourself. You need to deal with yourself. Some of you, your child's excitement reminds you of your pain, right? While you mask his free spirit as on spirit seriousness. So your child is suddenly free. You can't stand it because you were not free. You were not brought up to be free. Your play was taken away from you by your parent, and they also installed the capacity to steal your child's play from him. Now, question is, what pain are you hiding that you are yet to heal from? What is the crisis in your life that you are yet to deal with? Some of us are very confused within ourselves. You don't even know what you want for your life, but you think you have earned the right to control your child because you're not trying to correct the child. You're trying to control him, right? So whatever doesn't go in line with what you think you want becomes a problem. So you begin to hear things like, my child is rude to me, my child doesn't respect me, my child is this, my child is that. Meanwhile, the child just wants to be himself and engage in honest conversation with his or parent, right? But you can't stand that because you couldn't stand it. So the pain your father subjected you to is the same pain you want to subject your child to. You couldn't have an honest conversation. There were things you wished you could tell your father that you couldn't tell him. Now there are things your child is already wishing he could tell you that he couldn't tell you because you have created an environment of fear. Listen to me. You need to heal from your pain because the pain you have not dealt with will eventually destroy your child. And I'll give you an example. I have just concluded the study of the parenting system of Alexandra the Great, right? The mother of Alexandra the Great, Olympus, right, had the personal pain that she did not deal with, right? And her insecurity was passed to Alexander the Great because she kept saying that, that she kept telling that child that his father was not his father, that when he conceived him, right, that he was impregnated by Zeus, which was a god. So every time the child tried to talk, he said, no, your father is jealous of you. So somehow, he actually believed that they orchestrated the death of his father because she, at some point, instigated Alexander the Great to go and fight his father and snatch the kingdom forcefully. So you know what it means when your mother tells you that your father's blood does not flow in your vein, that it's God's blood that flows in your vein. Now, there was a personal pain that she has not dealt with. And insecurity was passed to that boy. And you could see who Alexander the Great became after a while. He conquered the world, no doubt, but at what cost? And there's a quote I'm going to read to you about Alexander the Great at the end of today's lecture, right? But you see, you need to deal with your insecurity. Don't use your child as a negotiating tool, especially for those of you who are single parent. So when I see people, you know, wear trousers as a mother to PTA meetings, I mean, these are the things our celebs do. I mean, it's a symptom of a dysfunctionality that someone needs to begin to work with them to heal. You are not a father. You are a mother, right? So accept the fact that the child has a father. Don't shield the child away from his father. The father may have been an irresponsible husband, but one thing people need to understand is you can be an irresponsible husband, but be an excellent father. You can be a bad father and be a good husband, right? So don't be using the child as a baggaging tool, because you're going to destroy that child. Heal from your personal pain. What failed was the marriage. Parenting has not failed because it's not been proven. So you must be able to heal from your pain and come to the table where you and your ex can agree on the terms of raising your children without bringing your own personal problem into that parenting space. So your personal pain can totally destroy the potential of your child. So you need to deal with yourself, heal from your pain. Your anger, tantrums, is proof that there is something in you that is yet to heal. Your irrational behavior, irrational response to what your child is doing is a feedback to you that there's a personal pain you have not dealt with. Number four is lack of a united template. Lack of a united template. When parents don't unite, one person will sabotage. Now, let me say this carefully. In case you are married, please, if one of you is from a dysfunctional family, let's say you're from a very polygamous home where there was a lot of infighting and a lot of, you need to accept that something is fundamentally wrong with you, right? If your spouse is from a home where it's monogamy, right? Where it's one father, one wife, right? You need to, and if he has had a good relationship, you know, with a parent, right? You need to take a cue from the person that has had a more settled upbringing and allow that person take the lead. There is no arrogance. There is nothing to prove. It's not competition. Don't be trying to outpute what you don't have, because you are going to sabotage, right? So if you have a spouse who is very, very good, exceptionally good with children or with relationship, and you know, you are very honest with yourself to say, children is not my thing. Maybe children even irritate you. You don't like teaching children. You need to take a cue from the person who is good and let that person design a parenting system that can help your children. To be trying to flex your muscle when you don't have the capacity will sabotage the best interest of your family. So when parents don't have a united template for parenting, so for example, I always insist on families having a perceptual code for their children. If you have said the perceptual code of our children is their royalties, and you have created a script, so that's what we call the user's manual for a child. By the way, if you want to learn how to do all those things, go and get my combo for the month, which is called the WizKid combo for raising exceptional children, right? It's available on www.iampraiseforward.com/WizKid. Right, WizKid is WHIZKID. You need to go get that. It has a whole lot of packages there, about 5 different products combined into one. Now, lack of united template in the sense that, so when you have created the child's user's manual and you say this is how to correct this child, we never beat, we never yell, we negotiate, and we remind the child of who he is. Now, if that has been created and you fail to adhere to it, please know that you are a saboteur. You are the one sabotaging who your children are capable of becoming because of your ego, right? And your selfishness, right? So you need to agree. How do we raise these children? Who are they capable of becoming? What are the templates available? What templates are we going to embrace as a family? Whatever template you have embraced, you need to stick to it. So if we say no yelling, there must be no yelling, because many of you want to beat a child, but you are not even sticking to the plan. So you are yelling. Who is beating you? Because you are violating the tenet of raising your children, but because you know your husband or your wife cannot beat you. So please, If your wife is the better person with children, let her design a parenting template. The parenting template that produced you was dysfunctional. You cannot afford to slap the same template on your children. You're already a victim of what your parents did. You need to now come to the table of parenting and agree on the parenting template to use and stick to it. Which means you need to die to yourself to be alive to the new order of things, right? The good thing about it is that if you follow it, it will change you. And once it changes you, it takes you to a place of healing eventually, right? A lot of us need to understand that it is counterproductive when husband has a worldview about parenting, wife has another worldview about parenting, yet your worldview has not produced any icon, right? You need to calm down and understand that parenting is not competition of who loves the child the most. No, parenting is what is the right template that we can use to help our children become the best version of themselves. So your anger cannot help them become the best version of themselves. Your tantrums cannot achieve that. Your personal ego cannot achieve that. Your selfishness cannot achieve that. Your insecurity cannot achieve that. Your low self-esteem cannot achieve that, right? So you see a lot of people, they just cringe when they see children who have good relationship with their parents. So if your child says, oh, my father is my paddy, my mother is my best friend, and they are gisting, they can't stand it. Your children don't respect you. So if the child says something, they say, that is respect. No, if you are a friend, there is nothing called disrespect. You know, freedom of expression doesn't mean you disrespect me. I play a lot with my children, but you know, they know where to draw the line. They know I love them, right? So please, you need to calm down and ask yourself, what is the right template that can help our children achieve the best version of themselves? And please, if you are in a dysfunctional marriage already, you and your spouse need to get a professional to sit with you and help you design a co-parenting script that the two of you need to adhere to get the best out of your children, right? Lack of united template can totally destroy a child. So when you check Elon Musk, I think the downside to raising Elon Musk was the fact that till date, Elon Musk still hated his father. Now, but if you hear his father's side, his father actually did a whole lot for Elon Musk that he's not talking about, because the father bought the first set of computer for him. The father paid for that trip where he contracted the passion for IT, right? He's not talking about that. You know, I don't know the role his mother played in all of this, but you could literally see, you know, who Elon Musk's family has been married 4 times. So you can literally see how the brokenness of his parent has replicated itself in him. It has not stopped his competence, however, but when it comes to his personal life, family life, you could see that at play, right? So please, if your marriage has failed, the two of you must become friends to raise your children by agreeing on a united template that you must stick to. So when you are angry, you still need to stick to it and ensure you follow it to the letter, right? I have created what we call the user's manual for my children, right? And I follow it no matter what I feel. I follow it. I have learned to say I'm sorry when I'm wrong to them. And we all need to do that. Our parents never said they were sorry for all their wrongs. We must learn to apologize to our children and engage them as human beings. They have emotions. We must respect them. We must not think because we pay the bills, we have earned the right to talk down or talk to them anyhow. Respect is reciprocal. You don't want your children to talk to you anyhow. You talk to them with respect. If your speech is a royal communication, they won't even have the capacity to talk like servants or peasants. They will also respect others, speak with other people with panache and with grace. Number 5 is limited exposure and close-mindedness. You will limit your child. Like I always say, you are like the aquarium. Your child is the shark. The shark cannot outgrow the aquarium. But if you break your aquarium and become a mighty ocean, your shark can grow to become mighty ocean. So you need to understand that your limited exposure can destroy your child, right? So when you are close-minded and you don't take any contrary view from your view, you will destroy your child. So for example, my mind is so flexible that I read almost everything available, right? Because I am not afraid of anything. Many of you are hell-driven. You don't want to lose your soul, so there are things you don't read. Now, so you realize that your life is triangular: religion, work, and home, right? You have no other life, no social life. You know, you don't read anything. You don't see movies. So you realize that you can't even play because the capacity to play has been taken away from you. Exposure does a lot to you. My mind is totally, totally exposed. I am learning new things on per second billing. That's why I love research, right? So when you are limited in your exposure and your worldview, you will not see the need for your child to experience certain things. So my son was saying to me, oh, that today they're going fishing. They're going to learn how to fish. And I was very, very excited, right? That many of us, so for example, you don't swim. You don't want your children to swim because you are afraid, you know, that they're going to get drowned. That's closed-mindedness. There must be a new skill you are learning. So, for example, I've gone back to salsa. I dance salsa every day now. What skill are you learning outside of all the serious-mindedness, book, degree? What are the mundane things you do, right? And what are the places you want to travel to? So many of us don't see travel as anything. You know, you say, why should we waste money? But that is exposure. Travel itself is education, right? So when your mind is closed and you don't want to explore anything at all, your children are showing you the future, but you're saying, no, that's luxury. I'm not going to spoil you. What do you mean by spoiling a child, right? You will limit your child if you don't expose them to knowledge, if you don't are not even expose yourself. So from the template we have researched so far and we have taught, you realize that the exposure of Bill Gates' father and mother helped him tremendously. The exposure of Elon Musk's father and mother exposed him so much. The exposure of Mark Zuckerberg's parents helped him. In fact, one thing common to all of them was that their parents were professionals, right? So your exposure is very, very key. You cannot afford to be close-minded about your children. So you must operate from a zero limit thinking to say, oh, what do I have to learn from this? What can I expose my children to that will help them in the future? Now, number six is comparison. Your child is not you. Your child is not his myth. Your child is not a pastor. Your child is not the pastor's kid. Your child is not your second born. Your child is not. So stop comparing. Like I said, if you listen to me 2 days ago, your first child may be Coco. It will take, the pronunciation again is cow. Okay, pardon me, I'm learning. Okay, cow. So your first child is Coco, whichever one. Okay, I'll learn to pronounce this properly. But just pardon me for today. You know, so if your first child is Coco, your second child is Rice, your third child is Kern, you realize that Coco would take 7 years to be ready. Rice will take 8 months, Khan will take 3 months, right? If you start comparing Khan with Coco, then it means that you are not being sincere, right? So people are laughing at me. Guys, pardon me, okay? Right? You cannot afford to compare one child with the other, right? If you compare your child, you're going to kill that child. What you are saying to him is that you are not good enough. You have to be measured up to the standard of others. No child is another child. A child must not measure up to the standard of another child. A child must measure up to the standard of himself. The only competition a child must have is not his mate. The only competition a child must have is his potential. Success is what you have done compared to what you could have done. A child must only compete against himself, right? So you can't afford and keep telling him all the time how what you did, what you did not do. There are things you are not saying. So you can't get, I came for every parent came first. Who came last in that class, right? So you need to understand that your child is unique and you must accept the gift of your child for who he is. If your child is going to be a cleaner, let him be a cleaner with pride. Don't wish he were a pilot, right? You need to spot the potential. It can be a super cleaner, a consultant cleaner who understands flooring, the science of flooring, and he can even hold certification, right? So don't limit a child because you have a preference of the profession you think he should function in. Bill Gates' father wanted him to be a lawyer because he was a lawyer. But you can see Bill Gates, even though was registered in Harvard for pre-law, he took courses in science and computer and mathematics, and we can see what he has become to our world today. So never compare the potential of a child. That is one of the reasons why many of us have low self-esteem and insecurity, because we were never good enough for our parents. They kept comparing us with Lagbaja's son. Tamedu's neighbor and son. You know, you can't see what your mates are doing. No, I am not my mate. Some of my mates are dead, right? So comparison can totally destroy and kill the potential of a child. And number seven is wrong environment. When the environment does not support the potential of a child can also die, right? That an environment includes school. Never take your child to a school without measuring is the school, without placing the school on the scale of its potential, right? So when my son, you know, when the second school I had to take him to, the only question I ask is, I want to see your music lab, because he had musical aptitude, right? Your child's potential should determine the kind of school he goes, not that you just take children to just any kind of school, right? And your what your child wants to become must also determine the kind of religion, the kind of denomination you expose your child to. If you expose a child to a denomination that is demon-driven, because the some denominations are basically built on the ability to cast out demons. If that's what you expose your child to, you can totally mess up his mind. So if you have a child who is a scientist and who can create vaccines for the world, and you expose him to that kind of denomination where everything is demon. So there's a demon in charge of malaria. There's a demon in charge of fornication. There's a demon in charge of... The child will suddenly begin to think that his innovation is demonic as well, and he will begin to pray for God to deliver him from any ancestral spirits that contradict what his parents are doing. Do you understand? Right? You need to be sensitive to the fact that not... You may survive in that environment. Your child does not need that. In fact, your child must not know about demons, right? Because it's competition abroad. Don't talk about demons. Every demon has become cartoon character in some nations of the world. But in Africa, we still talk about this demon, that demon, wants to kill you. No, a child must not. So in fact, how do you test this? Can you ask your children to pray? Ask your child to pray. If your prayer of your child sounds like, in Jesus' name, God, don't let my father die, don't let my mother die, don't let my sister die, that's already a feedback that your child has been captured. Something has been installed in his brain that is death-driven, that is fear-driven, right? He's trying to avoid death. There is no way he's going to innovate. There's no way he's going to dare things because he's already fear-driven. Right. So wrong environment can totally destroy your child. One of the things I do is to teach my children the word of God by myself. Right. So there are things I've gotten involved with that ideally I should not. But because I needed to protect their sanity, I need to teach them by myself. So what kind of school are you exposing your child to? What kind of religion are you exposing your child to? What kind of society? What kind of friendship? What kind of environment? So some children are already speaking with some accent, with some slang, because of the exposure, the environment you have exposed them to. It's your responsibility to create the environment that can protect the potential of a child. What kind of home environment, home system have you exposed your children to? Are they scarcity driven? You know those kind of home where that is scarcity driven, where you expose them to poverty. You say bottom pot is the sweetest, and your children begin to eat from the pot. Where there is no dining table, even though you had a dining table, your children never eat there. You have good plates stacked in the house. They never eat because you are afraid they are going to break it. So you have already created or installed poverty software in the thinking of your children, right? Where the way we serve meat is the tiniest meat that the child eats, so is all, and he must eat the meat last. He cannot eat it first because it's a criminal offense to eat meat first. Even though what your parents were trying to do when they asked you to eat meat last was the fact that they needed to ensure that you finish your food. So meat was a reward for finishing the food, but they did not tell you at what point to now revert back to eating your meat. I mean, at whatever time. So meat is like looking like the food, which is why many of us still go to the pot to go and steal meat, even in our adulthood, because there was a special tag attached to meat, protein, right? So you always feel that that's what we eat last. So it seems like meat has a special taste outside of the food. And that's why people feel insulted when you serve them food without meat, right? What you give to your children are moments. And they can experience moments consistently. So you can already create scarcity. So people feel that if we put the meat on the table and we ask the children to eat it, they will finish the meat. Let them finish it. It's an opportunity to begin to teach them. Just trust God for provision, and while you also work harder and ensure that, you know, when the table is set, it's set like a king, right? It can be done no matter the level you are, where your children can serve themselves. If they're already used to serving themselves, when you now take them to five-star hotel or to a retreat where they have to do buffet, they are already used to serving themselves, that they don't now eat like gluttons, right? So when some parents take their children out and they eat like gluttons, it's a function of their scarcity at home. Let me just eat as if tomorrow will not come. So wrong environment can destroy the potential of your child. Let me shock you. Your religious space can totally mess up your child. That is his power, natural power, is taken away from him. The choice of messages you listen to can mess you up, can mess a child up. So you need to sieve. The same way you sieve cartoons, the same way you sieve CDs and ensure that there is no porn or any vice in there, is the same way you must sieve messages. There are videos, no matter how religious they are, that you must not expose your child to. You must not expose a child to the coven of witches and wizards. Expose your child to the coven of scientists, right? Where innovation is made, so that your child can begin to aspire to innovate solutions for his world. So I've talked about assumption, arrogance, personal pain, lack of united template, limited exposure and close-mindedness, comparison and wrong environment. These are the seven deadly killers of a child's potential. Now, let me tidy this up today by reading to you a quote by Horace Mann. Horace Mann says, "Those who exert the first influence upon the mind have the greatest power. Those who exert the first influence upon the mind have the greatest power." If the TV is the one exerting the first influence upon your child's mind, the TV has greatest power. Now, question is, what is the quality of what is being churned out from the TV? When my children were smaller, I had to win them off cartoon and win them in the International Jewel, because I could no longer trust what many of the cartoon stations were doing. What a child needs is movement, right? So I win them into the movement of animals. And that's why when they talk about different animals right now, you will be shocked, right? And you also, you are exerting the first influence upon your child's mind. What are you building there? Are you creating fear, or you are creating faith? Are you creating timidity, or you are inspiring boldness? What are you exerting on your child's mind, right? There is something you are putting in there. Is it anger? Is it tantrums? Whatever you put in there, we come back in good measure, president, shaking together, running over. So when you see your child get angry, it was a function of the seed. If the seed had not been sown, it would not produce any harvest. So when parents say, "Oh, my child is doing this behavior, I don't know where it's coming from, I raise him in the way of the Lord," I say to them, we need to investigate. You are assuming that is the way of the Lord. Meanwhile, your child is interpreting something else. We need to understand that a child comes with tabula rasa. Imagine when your child is born, you put science, technology in his mind. There is no way your child will not become a genius, right? Imagine what you put there is the fact that you can become the best. One of the reasons Alexander the Great conquered the world was because his mother told him, "You are a god. I got impregnated by Zeus, right? Not your father." So the child suddenly believes that he could do all things. And his father hired Aristotle to tutor him. And Aristotle taught him so many things, everything he needed to know about life. And Aristotle told him, when the boy felt, "Oh, my father may not give me Greece to lead or Macedonia to lead," Aristotle asked him, "Would you rather?" So he drew a map for him, showed him the map of the world, showed him where Greece was, and showed him the rest of the world. And Aristotle asked a question: "Would you want to govern over Greece, or you want to govern over the rest of the world?" He said, "Even if you don't have Greece, you still have the rest of the world." So you can now understand why Alexander the Great went ahead to conquer the world, even though it was at a major cost, right? But you could see what a child is capable of becoming depending on what you stuff in his mind, right? The mind of a child is so critical. You can actually rent a space there and plant seeds there that will take a child to a global level where he's no longer comfortable with mediocrity. That was what Bill Gates' parents did to him. Now, I will end with a quote by an associate of Alexander the Great. He said, "Alexander, you conquered a world empire. You conquered the world empire from the back of your horse, but you cannot rule it from the back of your horse. If you truly want to be at war forever, your empire will not last. If I apply that to parenting, parents, you were conquered by your parents from the back of your horse with anger and with lashes, but you cannot continue to lead as a parent or rule from the back of your horses and based on those templates. If you truly want to be at war and anger and with Koboko, with Cain, right, your empire will not last, which is why Generation Z will rebel against you. You cannot survive it. They can get out of your face, and you will not be able to do anything, right? So you need to understand that our parents conquered us from the back of their horses, but you cannot rule from the back of the horse. Times have changed, right? If you want to be at war, our parents were at war with us. They blackmailed us, they bullied us, they beat us, they shouted on us, they did all kinds of things, right? If you want to be at war forever, your empire will not last. You need to understand that no tyrant can survive forever, which is why every empire eventually comes crashing down if they don't reinvent themselves. I hope I have helped you today, and I hope you have learned something great today. Please protect your children and ensure that you do not kill your child's potential by yourself. So today we've talked about the 7 deadly killers of a child's potential. When we come tomorrow, we will take on another aspect of this subject of parenting. Till I come your way again tomorrow, keep loving, keep living, and know that I truly, truly celebrate you. I'll see you tomorrow. Have a fantastic day. Bye-bye.